Hello and welcome to another episode of the Black Business Psychology Network's podcast. My name is Dr. Grace Manso-Rusu and I'm your host. This is the second episode featuring Elliot Miller. So Elliot Miller will be starting his clinical doctoral studies, the clinical psychology doctorate at the University of East London. By the time this episode is out, I'm pretty sure Elliot would have started. So those of you that started listening last week on the 16th of September, you'll
I'm going to kind of go back to your applications for the doctorate in clinical psychology. So when was your first application? What was the experience like? And then obviously you've had a few.
So my first application was in 2017. So 1 year after I graduated. Yeah. So I had the support worker experience in the bag. I kind of was going in blind. I'm not going to lie. I was going in blind. I had no idea what I was doing. Right. I think I was just kind of picking uni simply based on which ones were closest.
Right.
I didn't have anyone look at my application, press submit, no interviews. Didn't hear any. Nada. And then I was working as I just applied to 2017, so I'd done my support worker role. I think I was in my AP role for a few months because I think I started that July and then September, October, so I had a few months AP experience. So that's my first application. And then I didn't apply the next year because I just got onto the PWP course. So I thought, well, I want to complete this training.
Yeah.
Once I'd finished my PWP training, so this was now in 2019, I applied for the second time. Mm-hmm. Again, I probably was just picking unis based on geography. I don't know why. I had my previous boss in my AP role who was more than happy to look at my application, but I didn't ask him for help and support. Why that is, I don't know. I guess it's just that fear of kind of having someone kind of basically judge your
it is intimidating patient. It is, and you just want to like, I just want to see what happens if I just do it myself. Like, I did it myself last year, let me just, it's fine, I don't need your help, it's fine.
I think it's that whole thing as well, I don't need help, I can do it myself, like I'm fine. I don't want to ask for help, I don't want to be needy, I don't want to don't disturb anyone, like I think in that time I wasn't I think I was living in like a shared accommodation, I was having some problems, so I wasn't really in the right headspace. So I think I put in my application like I think I spent maybe a few days on it and submitted it, which obviously I don't think I deserve to get on because I didn't spend that time and consideration that it needed. And then the year after, so 2020, so last year, I applied for the third time and I was like, right, I think at this point I jumped on Twitter again. I think, I don't know why, I used to use Twitter when I was younger quite a lot because I was a massive Rihanna fan and I was like standing. I was standing Rihanna. She actually followed me just to get out of it. I think I was like, you know, one of those.
That is an achievement. You really did follow Rihanna. She followed you back. Wow.
I think she just thought, you know what, I got to get this guy off my back. But I jumped on Twitter again. I hadn't used it really for a while. I don't know why I thought I'd go back on Twitter, but I found this like psychology community on there.
Yeah, there's a big psych community.
I was like, what have I been missing out on all these years? And people offering support with applications for the DClin for this coming year. And I just basically just messaged, I don't know, like a handful of people. Brilliant. And I was just like, please, can you help me with my application? And I received the most incredible help from like current trainees, qualified clin psychs, to really kind of put my application under the microscope and give me that feedback and support that I needed. is there's so much talk about reflecting on your experiences. What is reflection? It's just a fancy word for thinking about thinking. But you know, just thinking effectively is what it is. Like, but how it's painted in psychology, reflection, it's this really abstract thing. It's like, how do I reflect?
Yeah.
But we do it all the time. We just don't even realize it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think what I did in my previous two applications is that I was just kind of describing what I'd done,
right,
not really saying what I'd learned from what I'd done or how I would use what my learning to inform my practice moving forwards.
Right.
Whereas this year, I got that help and support I needed to help me kind of transform what I'd done into that reflections. And I think that we use a model on the PWP training. It's the Rolf and just the Rolf model, the reflective model. It's like, what, so what,
yeah, yeah,
now what. Yeah. I did that for like a supervision case report as part of my PWP training, and
yeah,
that was the model I used to help me reflect on my experiences and my application. So what have I done, what did that mean, and what have I learned from it?
Mm-hmm. Useful. Like, those models are right, a really great way, just framing of how you write the thing. And it helps stay helps you just stay on track and like communicate what it needs to be communicated to tick the boxes, really, because you've done it already. It's not like you haven't done it, you've done it, but it's about communicating it in the way that they want to hear it. So after the application, because I know there's various stages to Deep Insight, what's the next stage after that? And also, sorry, where did you apply to in the third time? Was it based on geography?
It wasn't just based on geography. It wasn't just based on geography. I applied to UEL, so University of East London, Hertfordshire, which, it's just a bit outside of London. So I was being a bit more adventurous. Essex and UCL.
Okay.
Those are my four choices. One of the courses I applied to UEL, one of the courses I decided to apply for UEL had a selection test.
Yes.
Which I can explain a bit more about, but those are my four course choices. And so generally, if you're applying to courses that kind of look at your application and shortlist from your application, then you will hear back, I think it's any time between sort of February and I want to say
April.
But if you apply to a course that does a selection test, then you will sit that. I sat the University of East London selection test in February. And what they do is they combine your they kind of rate your application, and then they give a rating where they get your test scores from the selection test, and they use that in combination to basically decide on their final shortlisting for interview.
So with the assessment, do you know what it was called? Are they selecting for ability or is it a personality assessment? Because oxide, that's our bag, really.
Yeah, it's ability, really. Okay. It's a multiple choice research methods test.
Wow.
Which I was just like, oh no, why did I do this? And then there's also a situational judgment.
Oh, okay, brilliant.
Yeah.
That makes sense, because that's more, because SJTs do have a better face validity and they do have kind of slightly better predictive validity than your standard kind of cognitive ability tests, which are, you know, those annoying logic and other assessments, verbal, reason, non-verbal.
I had that for like my second application. I think I applied to Plymouth and somewhere else, and they had the verbal and deductive reason. I was just like, oh no,
they're not. I mean, at least with MCQs, research methods, you can revise for it, and with SJTs it's measuring like what would you do in the situation, so it's a little bit more, you can, as a candidate, you can see like, this makes sense, like I understand why I'm doing this makes sense.
It's then, kind of, you can't really prepare for it in a sense, because it's based on your own, it's very subjective and based on your kind of life experience and your work experience. That said, they pulled the situational judgment test in this year because there were people circulating previous questions from SJT, and they had to pull it to otherwise certain people would have had an unfair advantage.
Yeah, it's compromised.
But some people were really kind of banking on the SJT to boost their scores because research methods wasn't their bag. So that's really unfortunate. Yeah.
Whoever leaked it, just why?
Shame on you.
Why would you do that?
I know. Why?
Just no need.
On a Facebook group as well, with thousands of people in. Like, what?
Someone's going to find out, right? Like,
obviously. I think there's even like people from the admissions team in that group. I was like, are you mad? Oh, dear.
So, after the selection assessment, did you get selected for interview for any of the, like, with the course out of the ones you applied to? Who was positive?
I don't know why. I'm gonna say it on my chest. I got four interviews.
Brilliant.
From zero.
Exactly. Zero,
four.
That's really good.
I feel that I'm not smug saying that because I had my fair share of rejection.
Exactly.
But I got four interviews. So yeah, I was really kind of shocked. I mean, my goal, I think, with each application, although that didn't quite happen with my first and second application, was to make progress year on year. Mm. So I've said, as long as I got one interview this year, that was progress.
Yeah.
But I ended up getting four, which was brilliant. Which was mad. Yeah.
That's great. So do you have to then sit four interviews? Obviously you did. Well,
I decided to go for three out of four in the end. The reason being, so I had my interview with Essex really early. Essex do their interviews, I think, late March.
Right.
The last interview, Royal Holloway, I think, is like end of May. So it's they really vary. And I got an offer from Essex like a few days after my interview. So by the end of March, I knew whatever happened, I was on clinical training, which was like the most amazing position to be in because I could go in my other interviews knowing that I was on.
Yeah, there's a less like, not that you're desperate, but that kind of feeling of anxiety.
Yeah.
It's not as there as much. She's like, I'm sorted, whatever. Like, I'm just going to see what happens. I mean, at that stage, I've done this before when I've had jobs and I've had a job offer. I'm like, I'm cancelling all my other interviews. I'm not doing it. Yeah. But I remember having one interview after I had a job offer. I didn't get the role and I was like, but why?
I should be more chill.
Are you sure? But I also didn't care. I was just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I didn't get the job. So yeah, it's a nice feeling knowing that you've got a backup no matter what.
Oh yeah, definitely. It took the pressure off. And I think that my last interview out of the four was UCL.
Right.
I had Hearts and UEL sandwiched in between.
Yeah.
And if I think I'm allowed to say it, out of the four, I think UCL was probably my last choice. Right. Just in terms of the course, course ethos and values.
Yeah.
I had sort of certain preferences or preferred unis I was kind of hoping to go for.
Yeah.
So it didn't really make sense to go for the UCL interview because I knew that I would go to Essex over UCL.
Right. And you already had the offer.
So. I already had the offer. Yeah. So why not give it to someone who was on the reserve list to make the day?
No, but it makes sense. Like, especially like researching, I did a bit of research on Detail Insight courses beginning of this year, and researching all of the courses and the selection criteria and everything, they're very different. Like, obviously they have to follow the same kind of core stuff, but the ethos of some of them I was reading the selection criteria, I'm like,
100%.
And like some of them, they're like, you read this the kind of spiel and you're like, oh, this sounds exactly, so whatever, someone's going to find a course that fits and suits them.
100%. And I didn't do that in the first 2 years. Mm. I didn't realize that these DClin courses varied so much. Because I say nobody told me. You could argue, I had to find it out for myself, but I guess if you don't know, you kind of don't know.
But they don't tell you because you're just like, I need a DClin site clause. I don't care what it is because I need to get the qualification.
Yeah.
And you're assuming that they all teach in the same, you don't know.
Yeah.
Even with undergrads, you don't know. You're just
don't know. Like, so this year, the year that I've got on, I actually did my research. I didn't even know there was this thing called the Alternative Handbook, which is released every year. It's free. it's on the BPS website, and it's basically a survey with current trainees from each course. And that was the most helpful document to look at, because you got a sense from the trainees like that their honest opinions about the course and the course's ethos and the what kind of models are taught, like the balance of teaching on the different models, and kind of like, is diversity supported, how easy is it to get to placements, all of this stuff, like, do you need a car, all of this stuff is like really like the stuff you need to know to help you make that informed decision. So the courses I applied for this year were based on partly still geography, but in terms of, I kind of thought about where would I be prepared to relocate to, where's the first I'd be prepared to relocate to, and then from there looking at all of those courses in that kind of catchment area, if you like, and then really looking at the course values and the ethos, and I was applying to courses that valued a more social justice approach, so like HEARTS and UEL, very much like social justice, community psychology, Essex, quite systemic thinking, which is great, and more arguably more systemic teaching than CBT teaching, which is like really cool. UCL maybe more in the middle, maybe kind of more CBT teaching than the others, and probably the kind of a good chance you may end up in like an IAP service as well, which I kind of wanted to kind of get a different experience and done that. And as well, the cohort sizes differ greatly as well. UCL is a really big course, and I was kind of I value more of a smaller cohort.
Well, when you say big, what kind of numbers are we talking, Deacons, like?
It increases each year because of the funding from Health Education England. I think this year it might be in the region of like 70 people.
That is big. Yeah. That is big actually for a doctorate. Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah. So it's kind of increased a lot. So that's also another factor to think about.
Yeah, brilliant. So where did you choose?
So
I already know where you chose. Yeah, but I'm still gonna ask you.
So I ended up choosing UEL, which was my first choice, because of what the course stands for. I felt that this would help me become the type of clinical psychologist I wanted to be, someone who thinks about the wider social determinants to distress, rather than pathologizing people's distress and kind of individualizing people's distress, and actually kind of trying to change the systems which are maintaining people's distress. And it was also meant that I could stay where I am now, living in Southeast London. I didn't have to relocate as well, but I think even if I had to relocate, I still would have chose UEL because and I'm super happy I'm going to be there.
Well, I'm biased because I did my psychotherapy counseling training at UEL, and I loved it. I thought it was a fantastic course, and I've already heard things about UEL's psychology department in general, and they've basically, it seems like they're kind of pioneers of that kind of teaching where it is much more community psychology, liberation psychology based. One of the podcasts from earlier on this year, I interviewed an educational psychologist, but he trained years ago, and he trained at UEL when it was called West Ham Polytechnic. I think that's what it was called, like in the 80s. Yeah. And even then it was already like streaks. It was kind of where we are now with everyone talking about like decolonizing and all of that kind of stuff. They were doing it in the 80s already.
Yeah.
So I think definitely trying to find a course that suits you and the kind of psychologist that you want to be and fits in with your values is key, because then when you're in the interview, you can talk from an authentic standpoint rather than trying to fit into a model and you're just like, what's going on? I don't even care.
100%. You kind of hit the nail on the head. I'd say with all of my interviews, really, I was able to be my authentic self because I wasn't trying to be something that I'm not. I wasn't giving them answers that I thought they wanted to hear. I was actually speaking from the heart and what was important to me. And about my values and what type of clinical psychologist I wanted to become. None of it was a lie. And I can say that, you know, I think I would have been found out anyway, because I think they're good at, I think they've, maybe, I know some people might actually be able to, you know, some people might not even write their own application form. I mean, let's be honest. It must happen. So I'm sure you can get in. But I think it's, you know that. I think whatever would have happened in the interviews, even if I didn't get an offer, I know that I was true to myself. And that was the most important thing.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to be, if you're applying to Duke Insight course, it would be hilarious if you were like a massive imposter in the interview and turned into somebody else when you started the course.
You'll get found out on training.
Exactly. You'll get found out. It can't run. It doesn't happen. It's so exposing. Like, you cannot.
Yeah.
Like, it just, you learn everything. You're going to learn a lot about your course mates. I'm just saying.
I'm going to learn about a lot about myself and how I am in a group with so many different people and I think someone said to me, I can't remember who it was like, find your people and find your people quick.
If you can. I do think, because you'll be fine.
I like to think most of us at UEL will have a similar,
you wouldn't apply there if you don't, like, you can't, why, you, I mean, in theory you wouldn't, like, obviously we know that the competition with these courses is quite high, but again, the selectors will know if a person fits with the course that they're running. To be 100%. Honest. So I do think that there'll be like a natural similarity to a certain extent. Obviously there's some people that slip through the net, but
avoid.
Exactly. And my next question, getting towards the end, I don't want to keep you too long, but my next question near towards the end of the questions is around, and we've alluded to this slightly, but around your race and gender, or racial identity and gender identity, and anything else that you thought, like, throughout your pursuit into psychology, specifically clinical, has it ever been a, I don't know, I don't want to say a determining factor or a barrier, anything that you've seen either explicit or implicitly within the last few years that you've been in the world of psychology?
I think I didn't necessarily realize at the time, but just the lack of representation within the profession. And I don't think I was necessarily consciously aware of this, but maybe now I realize how much of a barrier it was, because there's not many black male psychologists. And if you don't see someone who looks like you, then it's hard to envisage you kind of being in that position. There's no role model or no one that you can really look up to and identify with on in terms of those intersecting aspects of your own identity, sort of in terms of my own blackness, but my maleness too. And I think that intersection is obviously has its own unique set of issues being a black man. I think that was a big barrier. And I think that's slowly kind of maybe getting a bit better, but nowhere near where it needs to be. So that's something definitely, one of the other reasons why I'm really glad I got into ClinPsych as well, is that I hope to inspire other people as well. Who, if they kind of can see my journey and say, you know what, if Elliot's done it, then that gives me some hope too.
Absolutely. I honestly think that it definitely, obviously you want to pursue your own dreams, but also kind of helping people along the way. Like you said, it's kind of paying it forward, like all those people that helped you with your application and being able to offer that support. And I mean, you don't have to, but being able to offer that maybe next year or in subsequent years, because you know what it's like for people that might not necessarily have the connections or the knowledge. Because we're both saying, again, I didn't know any psychologists before I studied A level and I still didn't meet many psychologists, obviously on the course. The academics, though, they're not usually practitioners. Anyway, and then meeting people that looked like me, I mean, even still, I mean, that's why I set up a whole organization for it, because well, like, where is everyone? But yeah,
like unicorns, isn't it?
Literally, like, you don't see these people, so where are they all? They must be somewhere. And I think even though some people who don't have to face that on a day-to-day basis, like, oh, what difference does it make? You just apply, everyone's got the same opportunity. We know that's not true. But it helps if you're kind of given that candid bit of information, like, what is it like, what is it that you do? Like, I do, before 100%. This podcast, I'm like, I didn't know what clinpsychs did, because I didn't speak to clinpsychs, because the parts of psychology, all the different applied areas, I do think are quite siloed. So forensic,
so much.
I mean, a lot, and again, it's strange, because clinical counseling, forensic, when you see, I've seen so many jobs, clinical counseling, forensic, or psychotherapist needed for this role. I'm like, whoa. But there's so much overlap, but we don't know that because we're trained separately and there's not much chance to collaborate.
Yeah.
But we're doing the same thing.
Yeah. I'm hoping that, you know, with the sort of, I know there's like the current BPS elections, but I'm hoping that with new leadership that we can have more joined up thinking between the different divisions, because it's division, it literally is the irony, it's called divisions, that it's divided. I think it's about, I think if you don't have access to sort of certain people, it's really difficult. And if I kind of say this, it might sound kind of quite like I'm joking, but I'm not. I don't think I would have gotten to the doctorate without Twitter, because
see, I'm always on social media, so hearing someone say like Twitter helped me and changed my career,
oh my god, I've learned really so useful. Much I've learned more than I have on my degree. I'm not even joking you, like, literally. Without Twitter, I still wouldn't have had those, I wouldn't have been able to ask those trainees who I could who kind of shared similar aspects of my sort of, especially my racialized identity with. Because I'm, if I'm being honest, I asked people who were black or brown, because I wanted to be able to talk about my own racialized identity in my application. And I knew that.
Someone that didn't have to do that. They're not, you can't, I mean, you're not going to ask them.
It's just difficult, isn't it? So I really don't know what I would have done without, because I wouldn't have known these people existed. I would have just been like, I wouldn't have had that support, so I don't think I actually would be speaking to you today in this position had I not. And I think it's this whole thing about psychology, it's this kind of not wanting to kind of share knowledge. It's like it's kind of like a
club, like, I must keep it all to myself. It's like, get over it,
I mean, fair play to the person, the situational judge. I don't know why they're pushing on the, anyway,
they took it too far.
Sharing stuff which is allowed to be shared. But yeah, it's like, it's one of the interview questions. A lot of the courses don't change the interview questions from year on year, maybe slightly tweak things. Yet this is kept, privately within these little cliques or clubs. Right. And actually, well, if they don't really change the questions much, then why don't,
it's an open secret then. Open,
yeah, why don't the uni, why don't even the unis just say, like, here's our questions, we don't really change them.
Yeah.
Why are we kind of, creating these kind of unfair advantages to certain people? And what I would say as well on your question about kind of barriers is that in terms of kind of my class background, I mean, I'm from a working class family. I would probably arguably be kind of even lower middle class now. But
You would be probably
100%. Especially when I start training, I'll be I'll be comfortably middle class.
Absolutely.
But in terms of kind of those honorary assistant posts, like honorary, they need to scrap that word honorary. It's unpaid assistant psychologist jobs. Call it what it is.
Yeah.
I couldn't afford to do that after I graduated. Like, maybe I could have afforded to do it whilst I was studying because I had my student loan. But which is why I did some voluntary work as a drug and in the drug and alcohol sense. But after uni, finishes, I wasn't living home. I was living in London.
Jeez.
I didn't have financial support from my parents. They couldn't afford to pay my rent whilst I was doing voluntary work. It's just not like, unless you have the means, if you're kind of, if you have that financial privilege, then you can go for these honorary assistant posts. And whilst they're great for some people, it's giving, again, other people that kind of leg up. It's not everyone starting on the same.
Oh no.
You know, some people get a head start, a big head start.
A very big, big head start. And this is where that inside it kind of knowledge, like why is there like a three-tier system? Like, it's ridiculous, because you are literally holding people back from the careers that they deserve, like everybody else. I do think there's a lot to be said for unpaid labor, and it's I mean even if you're working in the NHS, I mean, now obviously, I mean, AP post, what is that? AP is usually band three. Is it band three or band four?
Band, I think they're mostly band four. They might be band three, I don't know, but band
four. No, I think they're band four, which is better. It's just still like, I was trying to explain this to a family friend, and he was like, what, band four? Like, as a graduate, like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, qualified nurses are only band five, but even still,
you're
just like, what?
Yeah.
How, and especially in an inner city, how can you live?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, they have done, there is more funding from Health Education England with the aim of kind of increasing diversity and equity within the profession. And they've recently launched these clinical psychologist scholarships.
Yeah,
Seeing them. So, which is at least something. I think they're good. There are still some criticisms I have about it, in terms of the entry requirements needing kind of like a upper 2-1, which we know people from, you know, ethnic minority communities and carers and people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds have more challenges in higher education to be able to get those qualifications. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's good, but you're still kind of excluding a lot of people. And but you know, it's definitely something. And I think we just need to kind of just maybe create more of these opportunities. And I was part of a mentoring scheme too. I'm gonna give her a shout out, Dr. Kat Alcock.
Oh, I know Kat on Twitter.
Exactly.
Hi Kat.
she's great, and her mentoring scheme, the Valued Voices mentoring scheme, is amazing. I had a mentor for this year, and it helped me beyond anything that I could imagine. I'm really grateful and thankful for that scheme. And I think that the scheme's got some more funding, so it's going to be going for at least a few more years, if not. Yeah, great news. And so stuff like that's really positive, and hopefully we can kind of get more people who need to be within, and we need more representation within.
Absolutely. Because again, when you need to reflect the service users and the people within the services, and currently it's not happening. And this is perpetuating stereotypes, and I mean, we can talk all day long about syllabuses of declin psych and decolonizing and all sorts, but it makes, especially for frontline psychologists, all psychologists, but especially frontline psychologists, you have to be representative. There's no excuse anymore. Like, it doesn't 100%. Make sense not to be, because you're dealing with people every day from all different walks of life, so you have to have a level of representation.
Definitely to have that shared experience, and someone who can, service users, they can see someone who they can identify with and know that they don't have to explain them certain aspects of their identity.
You kind of can relax a little bit as a client or a service user. You can just feel like, oh, thank God, like, I don't have to do all of this mental gymnastics to try and get my point across. Like, they're more likely to understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah. 100%.
Anyway, I'm not going to support too much, but I need to talk about this. So, your future plans, last question. Yeah. So, obviously, you're on the declin site, you're starting September. Well done, congratulations.
Thank you.
Have you got any kind of like ideas about where you'd want to be afterwards, or kind of, like private practice, all that stuff?
Yeah, I would love to still be I love to think that I'd still want to be working in the NHS, because I'm like you, I believe in universal care that is accessible to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't want to make myself, I wouldn't just want to work private, because then I know that only certain people with the means can afford private therapy. So definitely want to keep one hand in the NHS. I don't know what type of sort of service, but that's kind of all I know. And then I also would love to work within the third sector. I'd love to go 360 and go back to a charity, community organization, grassroots stuff. I would love that, because that's more in line with my kind of community psychology based values. Is kind of developing services with people, amplifying the voices of the communities we serve, and doing it collaboratively, not in a tokenistic way where we just ask people every so often what you think of this or what you think of that, actually from scratch designing the whole service. And I would love to do some sort of community work, and actually, you know, because the NHS is kind of like we ask people to come into our sort of the services within the kind of four walls of the therapy room. Whereas actually I would love to be able to kind of going out to people, literally in the community, in the spaces that are inhabited by sort of local people. But that takes time as well, and takes time to build up that trust. But I think it's like definitely something that I can see myself doing in the future. And there's so many amazing people out there doing the work, like there's so many kind of amazing community psychs, like Angela Byrne and my mind's gone completely blank now. Carl Harris, who's who's running for BPS. So there's loads of people out there. So I'm just taking kind of inspiration from them, and I think it's who's it that says, I think it might be even Audre Lorde's book is that there are no kind of new ideas. We already have the ideas, and it's just about not trying to reinvent the wheel, basically.
Exactly. We kind of know what works at this point.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, most people know what works at this point. Let's just stick to that and just adapt it.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, thank you so much, Elliot. Honestly, I'm so happy that you got onto the Declin Psych. I think there needs to be more Clin Psychs in general, but like ones like you. And I have noticed over this year, this cohort, I keep seeing on Twitter, LinkedIn, people going like, I got on to the Declin Psych course after the fourth year. And I'm just like, geez, man, the level of perseverance and resilience that
100%.
Clin Psychs must have, especially if they're like repeat applying, makes for great clinical psychologists, because they understand to a certain extent what it's like to kind of have to try and try and try just to get to where you want to be. And I think there's a level of empathy that you would definitely exude when you're working with clients. So all the best.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to be checking in with you. Definitely. I want to know.
UEO alumni.
As soon as you finished, we'll definitely. I've already got fit. I'm thinking like, who could I? I'll definitely be asking you for some advice as well at some point.
Definitely keep in touch.
Brilliant. Well, have a lovely rest of the evening, and thanks so much again.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.